Hello, I'm Marla Naidu, author, blogger and teacher. You'll find me at my website, www.marlanaidu.com, on Facebook at Marla Naidu Author and on Author's Den, as well as Twitter at Inksa Oz. Welcome to my first Talking Books, Reading and Writing with Marla Naidu. I have with me today Sevgi Yildiz, coordinator of the Sydney Book Club. She is doing a wonderful job with keeping reading and the appreciation of the craft of writing alive. For this, I thank you on behalf of all writers. We are nothing without our readers. Sevgi will pose some questions on the writing process and her reading experience of my novel Across Time and Space. It's lovely to have you here with me today, Sevgi. Would you like to introduce yourself or shall we just get down to it?
Hello, I'm very, very excited to be here. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
I just wanted to ask you a few questions about this. What was your motivation for writing this first novel?
Okay. It has been a long-held desire, actually. I've been writing lots of short stories and perhaps chapters, unfinished chapters and finished chapters that have been left isolated on my laptop and on USBs. I looked at my journal the other day and noted that in 2007 I wrote, "I will publish my novel soon." 10 years later, here's the first one. Life happens, I suppose. Work-life demands grow exponentially with each passing year. So I decided now or never, and the urge became a flaring beacon that I had to address.
I think that's wonderful. What do you enjoy about the writing process?
I think for me, first and foremost, it is the solitude, I think, in terms of giving voice to the stories that I've had bubbling in my head and heart for a long period of time. I'm most tranquil when I write. It energizes me to the point that I forget the time of day, and 2 hours feels like 20 minutes sometimes, really. I love how situations and characters unfold throughout the process, but far more than anything else, I think it's the energy that comes from solitude.
So speaking of those stories that are bubbling in your head, who have you been inspired by? Are there any poets or writers that have influenced your work today?
I think looking back at inspiration, of course, it does come as well from being an English teacher for many years. So a lot of the writers of the English literary canon have influenced me. But for the actual process of writing, when the writing urge took hold, I found that Stephen King's memoir on writing made me take the next step from "I'm going to write a book" to "I am writing a book." So I certainly drew great inspiration from him. And of course, Shakespeare, bard of my world, most definitely. His perspectives on human nature, certainly, you know, the good, the bad and the ugly, all emerge in his plays. And I found him someone that I turned to constantly for inspiration through creating some of my characters. And of course, Jane Austen has been an all-time favorite. More recently, I would say Margaret Atwood and a host of other writers, as well as poets of the Romantic era. And you might remember Wordsworth, Coleridge and Keats, and the influence that they would have had over the years in terms of students of English literature. Inspiration comes as well from my reading as a child and continues through to today. So again, also being exposed to the writer Joanna Penn, I found a lot of influence from her and especially motivation through listening into her podcasts and reading her blogs and finding the fact that she tells you as a prospective writer, aspiring writer, to believe in yourself and to take ideas from your head and put them down on that page. So there are a host of writers, artists that have actually influenced the way I have now felt about writing and wanting to write.
That's really inspirational, and there's absolutely no denying that you're such a well-read author. But amongst all of this reading, when do you write, and how long do you spend in each writing session?
I'm not one that sticks to a sort of rigid timetable when it comes to writing, although I do prefer early morning, sort of 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. I am sort of most creative and most energetic at that time, but I will happily write in the afternoon. I certainly do not write at night because I think it's at that time the creative muse tends to go to bed too. So
a bit too early.
But each writing session is dependent on where my energy is at that particular time. As I said, I can't stick to a sort of rigid schedule. It's just when the urge sort of takes over, then I get into it, and I find that when I'm in that kind of state, then I get very deeply into it, enjoying many, many hours of writing. However, if I'm well into writing something, I might ensure that I create more free time in my mornings to actually get down to the writing process.
Absolutely. I would like to ask some more questions about the book, if you don't mind. Let's get into it across time and space. What message did you have in mind for the reader?
I think when I look at sort of the message that I wanted to give the reader, I think it was to create a sense of the reader feeling uncomfortable about the situation that they might be finding themselves in, and perhaps that sense of sort of being dead within, that they should then take up the sense of moving themselves out of that situation, exercising the right to change life paths or life decisions. And at the heart of it all was also fundamentally social justice, humanitarian values, pretty much the message that I wanted to bring to the reader. It's sort of saying to the reader, nothing's impossible. Take a chance, give it a try, and see what comes. I think that's really at the heart of the message that I was hoping to create for the reader.
Yeah, I definitely felt that. I love that you phrased it as the right to change. I don't think, especially women, sometimes realize that they do have that right to change and to choose. And it was quite an inspirational word for me, and I'm sure for many other readers. And I think you were quite clear on your message. It came through on almost every single page, and it was wonderful.
Oh, that's good.
Why did you choose London and Florence for the setting?
I think, apart from Sydney, of course, London and Florence have been and still are my favourite cities. There seems to be some sort of spiritual connection to those two cities.
Yes.
And without too much thought, I think they just emerged, with the stories that I had to create. And then, of course, I had to start working around who the characters were to sort of bring them to those settings with a sort of authenticity. But pretty much it was the love of those two cities that really sort of made me place my characters within those particular settings.
I did love those settings. And just to touch on what we spoke about just then, the novel is all about the pursuit of missed opportunities. And it was quite thought-provoking for myself as a reader, and I'm sure other readers as well. Did you come to any of your own realizations of missed opportunities potentially whilst writing this book?
I would think, yeah, there would have been a bit of soul searching there, certainly. And I think in terms of looking at my own sense of who I am, it was really about not missing the opportunity in my lifetime to really bring to life the voices and visions that I had for creating a sense of my own word or my voice for other readers. So pretty much I think it was coming to terms with not holding back with what I wanted to do at this particular stage of my life.
Now, I'm going to ask you something that really bothered me throughout the book, but mm-hmm. There are some varying degrees of infidelity in the book, especially mm-hmm. between Meryl and Michael.
Yes.
Do you in any way condone this behaviour? How are you hoping that your readers will respond to this? Do you want them to look at them with sympathy or like I did with frustration?
I think looking at that question, I think certainly it is an issue that a few readers have brought up, with their emails or their questions through the website. And just to quote, one reader emailed me while reading the book saying, oh dear, they've done the deed. And of course, I in jest wrote back and said, oh, the scoundrels. I certainly don't condone it like, Mrs. Warren of George Bernard Shaw's play, where she, for her, that was it. It was the way the world should run. But I think I was sort of aiming to be more realistic that vulnerable people will turn to the next safe, welcoming arms,
yes.
I suppose.
Yes.
It's sort of invalidating yourself for what might have happened previously. So I sort of created that from that kind of, hopefully from a realistic perspective. And I hope that readers would understand that it's okay to move on in relationships, but it depends on how you actually go about doing it. So empathy and frustration is good, I think,
yes.
If it's going to move people in a way for wanting to find out more about the characters.
A balance of both of
yes,
both
absolutely.
Sympathy and frustration, hopefully. But for me, I think frustration was a little bit more because
well, that's a good thing.
It was quite interesting. And when they did the deed, I think I threw the book across the room. I feel with that person who emailed you. So Meryl is quite an eloquent, hesitant, calm and collected character. She's so wonderfully spoken as well. Do you feel that this is the reason she's missed some opportunities throughout her life? Did you consider writing her as more of a free-spirited, unrefined, soul-searching character to match her actions?
I think, yes, Meryl is that sort of free-spirited character coming from a somewhat troubled background and getting comfortable in a relationship that was not the best for her as time progressed, perhaps looking for stability that she might have missed in her childhood.
Yeah.
And of course, as for being hesitant, I think the insecurity from a fractured childhood could certainly contribute, if I had to look at it more from a psychological perspective,
yes.
could have contributed to that sort of representation. It was my intention to make her free-spirited at that point in terms of wanting to break free from what was really shackling her down, really, from her creative energy. When my manuscript of Across Time and Space was returned from its assessment, the comment that I got was that Meryl's character was decidedly annoying, which I think was something that I really enjoyed reading, because I thought, well, it's moved the reader, so that's more important for me. And it wasn't to make her likable all the way through, but rather to create a sense of a connection to her.
Yes, I mean, that's quite real. Not everyone is likable all the time, besides
absolutely.
Yourself,
Mala. I don't think so.
But no, I completely get that. She was quite real, because we do have those inner conflicts
absolutely.
Where, you know, I can be calm one moment and then have such a wild thought and, you know, go out and pursue it. And it is fascinating to watch. So I did feel that with her as well. I loved her sometimes and I was kind of annoyed
yes.
by her sometimes.
Perfection doesn't really exist, does it?
Perfection is the most annoying thing in the world, I think.
Yes.
I think perfect.
It's a state of mind
yeah,
more
absolutely.
Than a reality.
Absolutely. And everyone has varying levels of perfection to themselves. I set my standards myself
yes.
and you set yours.
Yes.
And I think that Meryl is finding her
yes,
way.
Absolutely. That idea also emerged from my reading of Margaret Atwood's work and also her speech, you know, Spotty-Handed Villainesses, where she says literature should not always represent women as the very good figures within
yes.
a patriarchal
yes.
system. They have to be the good, bad girls of literature.
Oh, I love that.
So I think a little sort of branch taken from the wise words of Margaret Atwood there in shaping Meryl.
I love that so much. And in speaking of which, Marcia and Meryl, to me anyway, defy patriarchy, institutionalism, and many, many societal and racial norms. Did you intentionally write such strong women?
Yeah, I think the feminist surfaces there. Indeed.
I'm glad it did.
Indeed, I did have times where I had to think about, well, have the days really changed from the days of patriarchy and slavery? And one has to just pick up the daily newspaper or turn on the evening television news to know that really we haven't quite come out of that kind of era.
No.
And it's still eroding the human condition.
Yes.
They are both strong women, certainly, but they're equally vulnerable at the same time. So I crafted them with the intention that they were not martyrs, really, or not going to end up being martyrs, but rather strong enough to be able to make what might have been the right decisions for them at that particular time of their lives.
Yeah, I see
within
that.
The text, yes.
And to have such strong women, we need men to support us and allow us to become the
absolutely.
Strong women that we are. And
absolutely.
Which brings me to the wonderful Uncle Ben, who I feel everyone needs in their life.
Yes.
Do you have an Uncle Ben in your life?
Well, I really enjoyed crafting Uncle Ben, I must say.
Yes.
And he is a favorite with a few readers from varying age ranges, actually, surprisingly. And, of course, between male and female readers, too.
Yes.
I would have to say that I crafted Ben from a few of my ancestors, really, as I have had, that have since passed on, three such Uncle Bens.
Well, it explains why you're so strong then?
Who motivated me, you know, from love of reading and teaching,
yes,
and sort of appreciated my reclusive side without thinking, oh, well, there's Marla, the oddball. They sort of appreciated the fact that I could be who I was in a public sphere, and I could be completely sort of withdrawn, and that didn't make them sort of look down upon me in any way. So I found three Uncle Bens, three very strong male characters,
yes,
that buffered me through my childhood as well. So I think that's what came out in the crafting of Uncle Ben.
I absolutely adore that. I wish I had more Uncle Bens, and here's to more Uncle Bens.
Yes, absolutely.
In our society. But I want to ask you one last question, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
What have we got to look forward to in book two? And can we expect a book three? I want to know more about the future of Meryl,
yes,
and Marsha.
I wish I had all the answers, but I think certainly with book two, which is actually in the final polishing up phase after the professional edit, book two has a few twists and turns, few more twists and turns, I should say, and
yes,
unexpected revelations to come. So hopefully it will satisfy the reader. Book three is a thought at this stage, and I'm still deciding whether I will have an across time sort of series. However, there is something in the planning stage that perhaps might be a breakaway from the across series, or perhaps it would be part of it. So it's tempting to have a third book in line with what's happened, but another story is bursting forth at the moment, so we'll have to see how that goes.
Oh gosh, we're getting all the scoop. I'm very, very excited for whatever it is that you've got to put out for us. I'm very excited as a reader to experience
Thank
your work.
You. So I think, do you have any more questions for me, Sevki?
No, I don't. I think that's all for now. I will pick your brains on book two when
yes,
it's ready.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for this enlivened chat. And I hope book two keeps you just as engaged. And thank you to our lovely listeners for joining us today. And if they have any comments, I would please suggest going to the website, marlanaidu.com, and dropping a comment or two. So until next time, keep reading, keep writing, and we look forward to hearing your comments.